How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself, and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. Sheila von Weizmack lived a life of privilege. She was a Chicago socialite and philanthropist, wealthy, well-connected, and seemingly protected by the world she moved through. But in August of 2014, Sheila was found dead in Bali, beaten, placed inside a suitcase, left thousands of miles from home. And the person accused of killing her wasn't a stranger. It was her own daughter. What followed was a global media storm, a case that forced uncomfortable questions about money, control, mental illness, and the private dynamics of a mother-daughter relationship that outsiders could never fully see. Because this isn't just a story about a murder abroad. It's about what can happen behind closed doors, even in lives that look perfect from the outside. Bali is a place people go to disappear, but not in the way Sheila von Weizmack disappeared. For most travelers, Bali is an idea before it's a destination. An island suspended somewhere between fantasy and reality. Infinity pools spilling into the jungle. Private villas hidden behind stone walls. Flower offerings placed gently on sidewalks each morning. The air, heavy with incense and frangipani. The sound of scooters humming past temples that have stood for centuries. It's marketed as peace, escape, healing. For wealthy travelers especially, Bali offers a version of luxury that feels intimate and indulgent at the same time. First-class flights, private drivers, five-star resorts like the St. Regis in Nusa Dua, where personal butlers anticipate your needs before you ask, and a single night can cost more than a month's rent for most people. It's a place where time slows down, or at least it feels like it does. That's why Sheila chose it. She didn't go to Bali for excess. She went hoping for repair, for calmness, for distance from the chaos that had defined her life with her daughter Heather. Bali, to her, was likely meant to be a soft landing. Somewhere far enough away from Chicago, from police reports, from years of fear. So maybe mother and daughter could finally breathe the same air without it turning into violence. But Bali has another side. One tourists rarely think about until it's too late. Indonesia does not bend its justice system to accommodate foreigners. The laws are strict. The penalties are severe. And when violent crime happens, especially at the level of premeditated murder, there is no special treatment because you're American, wealthy, or staying in a luxury resort. Indonesia treats murder as one of the most serious crimes imaginable. Premeditated murder can carry life imprisonment or the death penalty, often by firing squad. And in Sheila's case, the brutality, the planning, the attempt to flee, the charges were as serious as they get. Bali does not shield offenders from consequences just because the crime happened inside a luxury hotel. In fact, the contrast only sharpened the horror. This wasn't a crime committed in desperation or poverty. It happened in a place designed for comfort, surrounded by staff, security, beauty. And still, no one could stop what happened to Sheila. And that's the truth travelers don't always hear. When you commit a violent crime abroad, you don't just leave your country behind. You surrender yourself to another system entirely. One with different rules, different expectations, and often much harsher consequences. Bali will always be a place of beauty, of rituals, of sunsets that stop people mid-sentence. But for those who know this story, Bali also carries another meaning. A reminder that paradise doesn't protect you from the worst parts of human nature, and that no amount of luxury can soften the weight of justice once it arrives. Bali may have been the setting where Sheila's life ended, but it wasn't where her story began. Before the headlines, before the courtroom, before the suitcase, Sheila Van Wysmack was a woman with history, a mind shaped by books, music, and ideas, a life built over decades, and a role she took most seriously of all, being a mother. To understand what was lost, we have to go back to who Sheila was long before Bali.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Sheila Van Wysmack was born on June 10th, 1952, into a childhood shaped by movement, intellect, and quiet ambition. She and her siblings spent their early years in suburban Detroit before the family eventually relocated to Milwaukee. From a young age, Sheila gravitated toward books and school, toward ideas, language, culture. Education wasn't just something she excelled at. It was something she loved. Reading, learning, and conversation would remain lifelong companions. As an adult, Sheila became a familiar presence in Chicago's social and cultural circles. She earned an MBA, moved comfortably among artists, academics, and political figures, and built a reputation as a woman who was both cultured and accomplished. She was a philanthropist, deeply involved in charitable and arts communities, and worked alongside prominent voices, such as Senator Ted Kennedy and legendary broadcaster Studs Terkel. She belonged to the Caxton Club, a century-old Chicago book club devoted to literature, history, and the written word, a fitting home for someone with her intellectual curiosity. Her interests were expansive and eclectic. Sheila loved Asian literature, found beauty and meaning in Wagnerian opera, and believed deeply in the civilizing power of art. Friends described her as intelligent, socially engaged, and endlessly curious. A woman who valued ideas as much as appearances, even as she moved through elite spaces with ease. She married James L. Mack, a respected jazz and classical composer, conductor, and arranger whose work placed him among admired musicians and performers. Their union blended two cultured worlds, music and philanthropy. When Sheila became pregnant, the couple married, and on October 11, 1995, they welcomed their daughter, Heather. Sheila was 43 years old when she became a mother, a late and deeply intentional chapter in her life. Sheila wanted to give her daughter everything she felt she never had growing up: opportunity, security, culture, travel, and access to the best education. Heather grew up in Chicago and attended Oak Park and River Forest High School. surrounded by privilege and material comfort. From the outside, it looked like an enviable childhood, but fractures began to form early. In 2001, the family took a Royal Caribbean Mediterranean cruise, a trip meant to be enriching and restorative. Instead, it marked the beginning of a long unraveling. James suffered a serious foot injury on board, and according to later lawsuits, the ship's doctor failed to provide adequate medical care. The injury resulted in partial paralysis, leaving James with permanent complications. He later sued Royal Caribbean, describing a humiliating and painful existence, at times forced to urinate into a bottle, while the legal battle dragged on for years. By 2004, police were called to the Mack residence amid claims that Sheila was preventing James's children from previous relationships from seeing their father, allegedly turning off the lights and pretending not to be home. Then in August 2006, during a vacation to Athens, Greece, James Mack died suddenly in his hotel room from a pulmonary embolism. Heather was only 10 years old. What happened next would later become a source of deep pain and controversy. Some reports claimed that after James's death, Sheila left his body in the morgue and continued on to Santorini, bringing a traumatized child with her. Heather would later say this was the moment something inside her shifted. That while she wanted to go home, her mother drank wine by the sea and complained to friends about her husband's death. Now, if that memory reflects reality, it must have been profoundly confusing and destabilizing for a grieving child. And that lawsuit against Royal Caribbean finally concluded in 2011, after James's death. After legal fees, $340,667 was awarded to Sheila, and $500,000 to James's estate. Now, despite a will written just 5 days before his death, leaving everything to Heather, a Cook County judge ultimately awarded the $500,000 to Sheila instead, a decision that would further strain an already volatile mother-daughter relationship. After James's death, Sheila and Heather lived alone together, and what followed was a gnarly decade of escalating conflict. Their relationship was deeply troubled. It was marked by frequent domestic disputes and repeated police calls, dozens over the years, ranging from theft to physical violence. Heather developed an explosive temper, erupting over minor frustrations. In January 2010, at just 14 years old, she punched her mother's broken ankle during an argument. Now, a mental health professional evaluated Heather and recommended hospitalization due to her history of violence toward her mother. But Sheila refused. Later that same year, Heather was accused of stealing more than $1,000. And Sheila also discovered her daughter taking explicit photographs of herself on the computer. Still, Sheila declined inpatient treatment, insisting on outpatient care instead. Caught between fear and fierce maternal devotion. In February 2011, Heather broke her mother's arm and removed the phone cord to prevent her from calling 911. Now, months later, she threatened her again. In December 2011, Heather was arrested on charges of domestic battery and aggravated battery involving her mother. She was found guilty and ordered into mandatory counseling focused on anger management. But even then, the cycle only continued. In November 2012, Heather bit her mother hard enough to leave a bruise. But Sheila even refused to let police photograph her injury. Friends said Sheila always took Heather back, that she couldn't let go. That Heather could be charming and sweet one moment, then vicious the next. And Sheila bore physical injuries, emotional exhaustion, and growing fear. But she still remained devoted, believing that love, patience, and structure could save her child. And by 2013, Sheila confided to police that she was afraid Heather might kill her. Heather was now involved with a troubling crowd, especially her boyfriend, Tommy Schaefer, also known as Tommy X, an unemployed rapper. was described as charismatic, manipulative, and emotionally volatile. He even had an outstanding warrant for marijuana possession and was viewed by Sheila as dangerous. Now, trying to regain control, Sheila sold their home and moved to Chicago's Gold Coast neighborhood. But the move didn't end the relationship. In fact, Heather became pregnant by Tommy, and according to her attorney, Heather underwent 2 abortions under her mother's control, and Sheila was attempting to obtain power of attorney to enforce a 3rd. It's even said that when Sheila booked their final trip, she was still waiting on blood work to confirm whether Heather was pregnant again. Now in 2014, Sheila's fear sharpened into something more urgent. She wrote emails to friends describing her long-running struggles and her growing concern about what Heather might do. Just 4 days before her death, she emailed a friend, Elliot Jacobson, writing, "I am more frightened than ever. I will keep in touch." Sheila was 62 years old when she and Heather traveled to Bali in August 2014, a trip she hoped might repair what years of conflict had broken. And friends begged her not to go. They feared for her safety. But Sheila went anyway. What was meant to be a healing vacation ended instead in unimaginable violence. Sheila Van Wysmack was murdered by her daughter and her daughter's boyfriend, a tragedy born not of a single moment, but in years of unresolved pain, fear, control, and love stretched far past its breaking point. And in the end, Sheila was not just a victim of a crime. She was a woman who loved fiercely, endured quietly, and hoped until the very end that her daughter could still be saved. What happened next would unfold far from home, on an island meant for escape and renewal. And it would become the final chapter of Sheila Van Wysmack's life.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
By the time Sheila and Heather stepped off their first-class flight and into the humid air of Bali on August 4th, 2014, the trip already carried a quiet tension no luxury could disguise. They checked into the St. Regis in Nusa Dua, one of the most exclusive resorts on the island, a place designed to feel insulated from reality. Villas tucked behind carved stone walls, white sand beaches, private butlers, rooms that cost hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars a night. It was meant to be restorative, a reset, a mother trying once again to reach her daughter. But while Sheila believed this trip might repair what years of conflict had broken, Heather was already somewhere else entirely. And from the moment they arrived, Heather was texting Tommy Schaefer back in the United States. And those messages were not about reconciliation or healing. They were about money, freedom, and murder. According to investigators, Heather encouraged Tommy to kill her mother, to make the nagging stop, and to gain access to Sheila's estate, which Heather believed was worth around $1.5 million. Tommy, however, thought the payout would be much larger, closer to $11 million. And that misunderstanding alone reveals how detached from reality the plan already was. And this wasn't a secret kept between the two of them. Weeks earlier, Tommy had told his cousin, Robert Bibbs, that Heather offered him $50,000 to kill her mother. And even more chilling, a month before the murder, Heather herself reportedly told Robert that she wished Sheila were dead and asked him if he knew someone who would kill her for money. But Robert didn't warn Sheila. He didn't go to the police. Instead, he encouraged it. He later admitted to investigators that he gave Tommy advice, suggesting methods like drowning or suffocation, and warning him to make sure there were no cameras. He pushed the plan forward, reinforced it, and helped make it real. Now, to set everything in motion, Heather stole her mother's credit card and booked Tommy a $12,000 business class flight to Bali on August 12th. But she didn't stop there. She reserved him his own private suite, all charged to Sheila. Now, when Sheila discovered what her daughter had done, she was understandably furious. By this point, Sheila had already been living in fear of Heather for years. Fear documented in police reports, emails, and private conversations. And now, her daughter had secretly flown her volatile boyfriend halfway around the world, using her money. Still, Sheila didn't leave. Instead, Heather and Tommy continued texting inside the St. Regis, coordinating movements, timing, access. The luxury resort became a backdrop for something unspeakably dark. At some point that night, Heather let Tommy into her mother's hotel room. What happened next was not quick. It was not merciful. Tommy attacked Sheila with the metal handle of a fruit bowl, striking her repeatedly in the face. The blows fractured her nasal bone and jaw, obstructing her airway, and Sheila suffocated. She died in pain and terror in a place that should have been safe. Now, afterward, Heather and Tommy worked together to stuff Sheila's body into a suitcase, a task that was physically difficult and gruesome. In the process, Sheila's neck was broken. Then they did something that feels almost surreal in its casual cruelty. They rolled the suitcase outside the St. Regis and placed it into the trunk of a waiting taxi. They told the driver they'd be right back, just checking out of the hotel. But of course, they never returned. The taxi driver waited for quite a while, and when he thought they weren't coming back, he opened the trunk and noticed blood seeping from the suitcase. He alerted security guards and then drove straight to the police station. When police opened the suitcase, they found Sheila. And by that time, Heather and Tommy were already trying to escape. They hailed another taxi, intending to flee the country. But they ran into an unexpected obstacle. Their passports were locked inside Sheila's safety deposit box at the St. Regis, and only Sheila had access. Stranded and panicked and running out of options, they checked into a nearby motel. But police had already issued alerts to hotel and taxi drivers across the area. By the morning of August 13th, Heather Mack and Tommy Schaefer were in custody. Their stories immediately began to unravel. Now, at first, they claimed Sheila had been killed by robbers who they had escaped, but that lie collapsed almost instantly. Then, Tommy changed his story, claiming he killed Sheila in self-defense during an argument. He said Sheila attacked him after learning Heather was pregnant and that he struck her in a moment of rage. But investigators had the texts. Dozens of messages, plans discussed in advance, money promised, methods suggested. This was not a spontaneous act. It was premeditated. Heather's story shifted too. She said she hid in the bathroom while the argument happened, emerging only after her mother was dead. And she admitted to helping dispose of the body, but denied participating in the killing itself. She also told authorities she was pregnant, claiming it was an ectopic pregnancy and begging to be sent back to the United States for medical treatment. That, too, was a lie. She was pregnant, but there was nothing medically unusual about it, except that the child's parents were now charged with murder. What began as a luxury vacation meant to heal a broken relationship ended instead as one of the most disturbing crimes Bali had ever seen. A murder born not of desperation, but entitlement, resentment, and years of unchecked violence. And at the center of it all was Sheila Van Wysmack, a woman who tried again and again to save her daughter, even when it cost her everything.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Justice for Sheila came slowly, unevenly, and across two countries. But it did come. In 2015, inside an Indonesian courtroom far from Chicago, and even farther from the life Sheila once lived, Heather Mack and Tommy Schaefer were convicted of premeditated murder. Under Indonesian law, they faced the very real possibility of the death penalty by firing squad. Now that sentence ultimately wasn't imposed, but the gravity of what they had done was unmistakable. This was not a crime of passion. It was not an accident. It was planned, and the court said so plainly. Now, Sheila had fought for her life. The autopsy told a story her killers could not erase. Defensive wounds marked both of her forearms. There were injuries to her forehead, a broken finger, severe trauma to her face. Her neck was broken. She died of asphyxiation after blows so violent they fractured her bones and blocked her airway. Whatever narrative Heather and Tommy later tried to shape, Sheila's body told the truth. She struggled. She resisted. She wanted to live. Heather and Tommy were sentenced to prison terms in Indonesia. And while the conviction was a form of justice, it was an imperfect one. Heather served 7 years of a 10-year sentence, released early for good behavior. During her incarceration, she gave birth to a daughter, Stella, conceived shortly before the murder. Under Indonesian law, Stella was allowed to live with her mother in prison for the first 2 years of her life, growing up behind walls meant for punishment, not childhood. After that, Stella was placed with an Indonesian foster family until she was 6 years old, when she was then reunited with Heather at the airport upon Heather's release. What troubled many observers, and frankly, many people who cared about Sheila, was how Heather described prison afterward. She said it wasn't that bad. Reports indicated she drank alcohol, wore makeup, had access to a phone and social media. At some point, she began presenting herself as reformed, learning the language, becoming a model prisoner, choreographing dance performances, singing in the prison choir, teaching fitness classes. By the time she was released, Heather said she regretted the murder and missed her mother. Now, those words landed hard for people who remembered the emails Sheila wrote before her death, emails filled with fear. Heather even expressed hope that she could stay in Indonesia and rebuild her life there. But that wasn't an option. In 2021, Heather Mack and Stella were deported to the United States. When their plane landed at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport, U.S. federal agents were waiting. Heather was immediately arrested, this time on conspiracy to commit murder in a foreign country and obstruction of justice. This was a moment many believed should have come sooner. Stella was with her mother at the time of the arrest. After a custody dispute, the child was placed with a relative, another life irrevocably shaped by the violence Sheila endured. Now, before her U.S. arrest, Heather spoke optimistically about the future. She said she planned to focus entirely on Stella. No dating, no job for at least 6 months, homeschooling through Stella's Bali school, dance classes, painting, a quiet, careful life. But that future was never really hers to plan, because Heather Mack is a convicted murderer. Her attorneys asked for a 15-year sentence, arguing she should receive credit for the 7 years already served in Indonesia. And she was automatically credited for the more than 2 years spent in U.S. custody while awaiting trial. And Heather ultimately pled guilty. The plea agreement capped her sentence at 28 years, with two additional charges dropped. In January 2024, she was sentenced to 26 more years in federal prison, a total sentence amounting to roughly 23 years remaining after credits. Prosecutors also sought 5 years of supervised release, a $250,000 fine, and $262,708 in restitution. Now, as for the motive, the defense offered one explanation. Tommy claimed the killing stemmed from hurt feelings during an argument, words spoken in anger. But prosecutors told a different story, money. They argued that Heather killed her mother to gain access to a $1.5 million trust fund. Now, the texts, the planning, the promises of payment, the belief, wildly inflated, that Sheila's wealth was far greater than it actually was. Greed, resentment, entitlement, a belief that Sheila stood in the way of freedom. Prosecutors alleged that Heather held her mother's mouth shut while Tommy struck her with the fruit bowl. Now, Heather has never admitted to that, only admitting to helping stuff her mother's body into a suitcase. But the courts made it clear. Participation does not end when the killing stops. And justice did not end with Heather and Tommy. Remember Robert Bibbs, Tommy's cousin? The man who heard the plan, who knew what Heather wanted to do, who offered advice instead of warning, who encouraged instead of stopping it? He too was held accountable. In the United States, Robert Bibbs was sentenced to 9 years in prison for his role in covering up and facilitating the murder. It wasn't justice equal to the life lost. Nothing ever could be. But it was an acknowledgement that silence and encouragement can be deadly. Justice for Sheila did not come cleanly or quickly. It crossed oceans. It spanned court systems. It arrived in fragments. But it arrived. And it stands as a reminder of what Sheila endured and of what was taken from her. A life of intellect, culture, devotion, and contradiction. A mother who tried again and again to save her child. A woman who was afraid, who asked for help, who still hoped. And Sheila fought for her life. In the end, the world did not let her death disappear into a suitcase.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bali is often sold as a place where nothing bad can touch you, and that belief can be dangerous. When people imagine Bali, they picture barefoot luxury and spiritual calm. They picture healing retreats and honeymoon villas, not police tape or courtrooms. And most of the time, Bali is safe. Millions of travelers pass through the island every year without incident. But safety isn't just about crime rates. It's about awareness, boundaries, and preparation, especially when emotions, family conflict, or power imbalances travel with you. Sheila's story reminds us of something uncomfortable. The greatest risk on a trip doesn't always come from strangers. Now, one of the most important travel safety lessons from this case is deceptively simple. Pay attention to who you're traveling with. Travel amplifies everything. Stress, resentment, control issues, dependency. When you remove people from their routines and support systems, whatever is simmering underneath often comes to the surface. Sheila didn't go to Bali with someone she feared could hurt her. She went with someone she already feared might. Another lesson is about control over documents and money. When traveling internationally, always maintain independent access to your passport, identification, credit cards, and emergency funds. Sheila held that control, and ironically, it's one of the reasons Heather and Tommy couldn't flee. But the larger lesson stands. Never allow yourself to be financially or logistically trapped, especially when traveling with someone who has shown manipulative or aggressive behavior. It's also critical to understand the legal system before you go, even if you think you'll never need it. Indonesia's laws are strict, and they are enforced, particularly when it comes to violence. If something goes wrong, the process will not feel familiar or comfortable. police procedures, court timelines, detention conditions, and even basic communication can be overwhelming if you're unprepared. Knowing emergency numbers, embassy contact information, and where to seek help isn't paranoid. It's responsible. For tourists, another often overlooked safety tip is to listen to your intuition, even in beautiful places. Luxury can create a false sense of security. Five-star resorts feel insulated from reality, but they're not immune to human behavior. Being surrounded by staff and amenities doesn't replace personal vigilance. If something feels off, emotionally, physically, or situationally, it matters, even if you're somewhere that looks like paradise. And finally, perhaps the hardest lesson, don't ignore fear because it's inconvenient. Sheila expressed fear before she traveled. She wrote about it. She shared it with friends. And still she went. Driven by hope, love, guilt, and the belief that a mother should never give up on her child. That instinct is deeply human. But safety sometimes means choosing yourself, even when it hurts. Nepali remains a stunning destination. It can be joyful, restorative, and profoundly meaningful. But Sheila's story reminds us that safety isn't about geography. It's about relationships, awareness, and the courage to take fear seriously. Travel should expand your world, not quietly narrow your options. And sometimes, the most important safety decision happens before you ever board the plane. As we close this story, what's left behind is not just a crime, but a life that deserved more than the way it ended. Sheila Van Weismack was a woman who loved books, music, ideas, and culture. A mother who kept trying, even when she was afraid, even when the cost kept getting higher. Her death in Bali wasn't an accident, and it wasn't sudden. It was the end of years of conflict, fear, and a tragic belief that love alone could fix what was broken. Justice can't give Sheila her life back. It can't erase the fear she lived with. It can't undo the violence of her final moments. And it can't heal the people who loved her and were left to make sense of something that never should have happened. So maybe the most important thing we can do is remember her as more than a headline, more than a suitcase, more than a shocking story in a faraway place. Sheila Van Weismack was a person. She mattered, and her story deserves to be told with the care and humanity she was denied in the end. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod. And subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates. And even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.